and Tis the Law has the lead at the top of the stretch. It is Tis the Law in front with 3/16 to the finish. Tis the Law has a four-length lead. He's left the others behind.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga, just minutes from the track. The Leah Auto Group, Leah Cars for life. Find them on the web at leahcars.com. The new Capital OTB wagering platform. Bet any place, anytime with the new Capital OTB wagering platform. CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier wagering site in New York State. And the Clubhouse Racebook. Can't make it to the track? Make it to the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on Friday the 13th. We'll try to make it a lucky Friday the 13th. Try to give you some good information today on Racing Across America coming up on today's show. Towards the end of the show, I was in the winner's circle on Saturday, so I got a little post-Whitney with Brad Cox, also post-Saratoga Derby with Joe O'Brien. That was kind of fun. That'll be towards the end of the show. It's just a few minutes. And the game plan was to run it Sunday, and then we had the technical difficulties. But that'll come towards the end of the show. We'll also be joined a little bit later on by Nicole Russo from the Daily Racing Form. Of course, she started here at the Saratogian, but now has moved on to the Racing Form, where kind of her beat is breeding and sales and whatnot. So we'll recap Monday and Tuesday down the street at Facing Tipton with Nicole, and also preview a little bit. They have the New York Bread Sale coming up Sunday and Monday. Michelle Giangiulio, we taped a nice interview with her yesterday. Her first career win, the Evan Shipman. So first career win, sixth starter. First career win, she gets a stakes victory up at Saratoga. So a nice story there. But we're going to kick off the show with an owner you see in the PPs often. And if you were paying attention, you saw him in the winner's circle with the winner yesterday as well. A board member at NYFA, the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. We'll talk about all of that and more with Rob Masiello. Rob, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Very good. Happy to have you jump in and talk a little horse racing and NYFA and the game in general. But let's start out and pull up, ask for a replay from yesterday afternoon, race number 9. It's a keeper. The number 3 horse here gets it done for you. You and I were talking, and I said it's 17-1. I kind of kicked myself. I didn't use you in the low rollers contest. But you said when she gets in good form, she comes through, and she certainly looked good yesterday at a price.
Yeah, I mean, Dylan, if you watch a replay of this race, Dylan just could not have given her a better trip. And everything sort of worked out. The Linda's filly, who's the one here, didn't break, and we were just kind of able to sit the trip, and the leader kind of drifted out a little bit. We kind of found our way through. Yeah, she's really a filly that when she's doing well, she's doing well. If you look at her PPs, the times that she's won, she's paid $20-$30 because it's just she'll be a little bit off form. But, you know, Tommy doesn't work a lot of horses 47. She worked 47 last week. It was a little bit of a tout of herself.
Yeah.
I think she, you know, I thought she was going to outrun her odds. I didn't necessarily know if she was going to win or not because it's, you know, it was a tough race. She ran really well, and we celebrated last night.
There you go. Deservedly so, and I'm sure other folks who were on board celebrated as well at $36 and change. So, again, nice win there. Wanted to talk a little bit also about some of the other horses, but one I'll talk a little bit about the name because during the handicapper's report, now you can't leave. Bronx Tale reference?
So I enjoyed, because I was watching earlier, and I enjoyed the fact that there was some debate about whether or not it was a Bronx Tale.
Okay.
Like, as though, like, how Italian do you think I am that I just speak like that I would name a horse that without having the reference? I mean, Jesus, you know. But no, it is from a Bronx Tale. So a lot of my names actually are related to kind of financial Twitter memes. And so back at the start of COVID a year and a half ago, you know, if the stock market, so I work as an equities trader. And so if the stock market's down more than 7%, they halt the stock market for 15 minutes. So it was a big running joke because it was happening a lot in like March of 2020 that like the stock market would open, it would halt for 15 minutes because it was down 7%. And then people would tweet out the picture of Chaz Palminteri with the "Now You Can't Leave." So it just became like a running joke. Actually, a funny story with that too is the first time I swear to God this is true, the first time the stock market halted because of that, it was like 9:32 in the morning. It opened immediately down 7%. Stock market halts for 15 minutes. So we're just kind of like all sitting on our thumbs. I pull up my Internet Explorer, my Chrome, and the front page headline is that Service and Navarro got busted. And I was just like, and this is in the height, this is like right when COVID starting, like stock market's going crazy. And then I read that and I'm like, what a day. Like my life is literally falling apart today.
I mentioned, and you might have seen that earlier, that I checked out your Twitter feed last night and I was laughing because normally the gate is not closed back here as early as it was. But last night I also came back here and you had a picture of the gate closed and now you just can't leave. That was very good. You say you're an equity trader, and one of the questions I was going to ask, is there any similarity between your profession and your hobby, as it were?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I think one of the things I've learned in the last couple of years is there is, you know, I think there is in terms of risk management and in terms of, you know, trying to have a plan and think about sort of what the upside is in certain things and what the downside is. And obviously it's difficult owning horses. It's, you know, it's a lot of money and, you know, you can end up with horses that will kind of collect bills and not really, you know, make money on the track. But I think if you think about it a certain way and if you run a little bit aggressively and maybe think about trying to buy, you know, one of the things I try to do, I think a little bit more now is buy fillies versus colts where I feel like there's a little bit of residual value and stuff. But yeah, I mean, look, there's, you know, it's there. I think in that sense, there are a lot of similarities. But so I think I've like used a little bit of what I learned, you know, in my career, and I've sort of tried the last couple of years to apply some of that stuff, I think, a little bit more to what I'm doing. And I think like 4 or 5 years ago, I was just kind of like lost in the woods, you know, just up here and trying to get horses. And like, I think it's better to have a little bit of a strategy.
Were you active over here Monday and Tuesday, or will you be on the weekend?
I was active bidding. I didn't actually sign a ticket. I was active as an underbidder. I did do one horse with West Point and Vinny Viola, though, and I'll be active with the New York Bred Sale. I'm at a point now where, so I've had horses with West Point for a long time. I still have some horses with West Point, but I'm kind of more on my own. And so I'm looking to buy, let's say, 4 or 5 in this crop. I'll do a New York Bred or two this weekend and then go to Keeneland and buy a couple and maybe buy a 2-year-old. And it's good. It's a good number for me. I have a 5-year-old or a 4.5-year-old. So we come up here in the summer, but I'm busy between work and raising her and stuff. So it's like, it's a good number. I've probably had like 8 or 9 starters up here. It's like a perfect number where it's like some days we've got runners, some days we don't. We come over, we get Shake Shack, we get ice cream.
Yeah, yeah.
It's perfect.
There you go.
Dad of the year.
You talk about the New York Bred Sale. Talk a little bit about the New York Bred program. I mean, if you have a good New York Bred, you're set. You have all kinds of options.
Yeah. So Tommy and I, you know, so the filly we had yesterday is New York Bred that we bred. So, you know, on top of the great purses, it's also the Breeders Award if you breed here. And look, I mean, you've seen over the years, whether it's Tis the Law, I mean, there's 100 New York Breds that can compete in open company and win graded stakes and win grade ones. So it's a wonderful program. And, you know, unfortunately, it shrunk a little bit over the last couple of years. And so you really, I think, but as a buyer, you have such an advantage if you go and buy a couple of New York Breds next week that, you know, you're competing against a little bit smaller crop and you're competing for a lot of money. So it's just a great program.
You talk about the Breeders' Awards, and I think a lot of our viewers may not be aware of that. If you breed a New York Bred, that can also be lucrative. If the horse gets sold and moves on to another owner, you get a Breeders' Award regardless.
Right. I think we toasted the Breeders' Awards last night, Tommy and I, at dinner. It's like the Breeders' Awards are paid for dinner tonight.
Good.
Salud.
Again, you're a board member, New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, NYTHA, and one of the initiatives they have started over the past few years, the Empire Racing Club. And I was asking you when you sat down, you know, how that's going and whatnot. And I pulled up a replay going back to May. This horse just started up here a couple days ago, but I wanted to get the win going back to Belmont in May, Community Adjusted. You own this in partnership with the Empire Racing Club. So we'll watch Community Adjusted get it done for some folks who are kind of getting introduced to the game. Talk a little bit about the Empire Racing Club.
So this was a Thursday Twilight race. I think it was the last race of the day, actually. And Christoph said it was like winning the Breeders' Cup. It was so loud. There were, I wasn't able to make it out this day, but I think there were like 30 or 40 club members out. And they interviewed one of the club members before the race. Then they interviewed another one.
Oh, I remember
after.
Seeing that now.
They were both
right. Yeah.
Phenomenal interviews.
Yeah, 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 yeah,
really
yeah.
Good interviews.
Super enthusiastic.
Very enthusiastic. Yes. And so what we did on a ninth of board levels, we basically wanted to redo what Churchill Downs did with their racing club, which is it's a very low cost way to get in. You don't get a financial interest in the horse. What you get is you're basically a member of a club, and it's a few hundred dollars. And so what we do is we give you the experience. It's like a trial period. You get the experience of what it's like to own a racehorse, and you get to meet trainers. We do Zoom calls with our trainers and bloodstock agents and all the different like various parts. I think one of the things, so I came into this game as a fan. I didn't grow up in the sport. I wanted to start buying horses like 10 or 15 years ago, and I didn't really know how any of this stuff works. So thinking about that and thinking about all the fans that you meet here every summer that are interested in the game and like, you know, could potentially claim a horse, could potentially go into a syndicate. Like, you know, I do West Point stuff, but like whether it's Zillow or West Point or whoever, you know, just trying to give them that trial period so that they're risking very little money and they get the experience of what it's like to be an owner. And then what we've had, fortunately, on the back end is the people that like decide that they want to move on from that and go do something else and go claim a horse or go to the New York Bred Sale and try to buy a horse. We'll support you there. We'll give you the resources. We'll let you know how to go about that and just try to be a support system. So that's really what it's all about. And it's worked out really well.
So if people might go to NYTHA website, they can find out more or see you on track, ask you about it.
Just buy me a beer. I'll talk to you all about the racing club. We'll have a good time.
It all works out that
it all
way.
Works out. No, but also on the NYTHA website, it's probably the more appropriate answer to that question.
And again, it's the Empire Racing Club, and it's a great way, as you say, to get introduced to the game. If you're thinking, hey, maybe I'd like to get involved in ownership, you get to see the ins and outs of it and maybe step into the winner's circle and maybe get interviewed on Fox Television. Who knows what might happen. I also wanted to pull up another replay from just a few days ago, August 8th, Masked Marauder, the number 10 wins, but number 5, Baba Graham, went out for you, and I love the name because my nephew, his kids call him Baba. But as I understand it, this is your daughter and her grandparents, Baba and Graham. And I pulled up a shot that will show after the race as well that I pulled up from your Twitter feed with your daughter and her grandparents. Talk a little bit about Baba Graham. And again, nice little second here. Very lightly raced. This was only the second career start. So what's the future for her and how happy were you the other day? And talk a little bit about the name.
So this is those are my parents and my daughter Penny, and
we're driving
at the Morley Barn. She's driving. So Penny's always called my dad Baba and my mom Graham, but she just calls them Baba Graham. Like they're just one entity. They're like the entry. They're the one and the 1A. You know. So we named this horse Baba Graham. You know, went perfectly. We bought him as a yearling. We wanted to debut up here, and we did. The problem was he debuted as a 4-year-old, not a 2-year-old. I'm sorry, actually debuted at Belmont. But he's had some soundness issues. Bruce Jackson did a phenomenal job with him, kept him together. He's got a little bit of ability. You know, he was just second best that day. But I think that race comes back at the very end of the meet. So we'll try to get a win up here. I've been coming up to Saratoga since I'm a kid with my parents. So it would be awesome to win up here with that horse at the end of the meeting, get the big photo together
be great. And I'll tie in because always when guests come out, I do a little bit of research and whatnot, and I was reading a bio of you. And according to that, your first visit to the track, you were in a summer program as a kid over at Skidmore, and your parents came to town and came to the track.
It was my first summer away that I'd ever been away from my family, and I was so homesick. The first week I was up here, I was up at Skidmore College at, like, nerd camp, and I'm here for a week, just homesick, wanting to go home, wanting to play baseball, wanting to be with my friends. I mean, I didn't know anyone up here. I'd never been away from home. My parents come up, and they're telling my parents, like, just let them stay here. It'll be fine. And my parents were like, no, we're coming up. Like, we know our son, blah, blah, blah. So they drive up here the first Saturday, and we go downtown, get ice cream, all that stuff. And I'm still like, I just crying. I just want to go home. Fine. So my dad says, all right, but like, listen, your mom and I used to go to Monmouth Park every Saturday when we were kids, because I guess my mom's dad was like a degenerate gambler and just, you know, would go to Monmouth Park all the time. So he's like, I've never been to Saratoga. They always said, go to Saratoga. Let's at least go to the track for a couple races, and then we'll pack you up and take you home. Go to the track. We hit like a 10-1 shot. Like, all of a sudden, I'm happy. I mean, I was happy because I was like just doing something fun with my parents, and things just started to feel normal again. But you know, anyway, go back that night, and I'm like, you know what, let me give it one more shot, and then things were, like, I was still a little homesick, but I was, like, better, and then I was fine by the end of the meet, and then did that three more years, and it always lined up where, like, the graduation day was on Whitney Day. And so, and you know, you'd have kids from around the world came to this program. It was run by Johns Hopkins. And so you'd have all these kids, like, and parents would be like, oh, we got to get a flight out of here. So, they do like a graduation, then you'd have to do like a parent teacher conference, and then you could leave. So I always tell the teacher, like, listen, I know, like, you've got these kids that got to leave, but, like, we got to go to the track. It's Whitney Day. Like, you got to let us go first.
It's post time.
It's post time. Like, we'll miss the first race, but, like, if we start missing the second, third race, it's going to be a problem. So that's our story up here.
That's a great story. Yeah. And talk about subsequently, again, New York racing, year-round racing. Talk a little bit about, as an owner and a NYTHA board member, year-round racing in New York. But also tie in just how important and how great Saratoga is, not just for New York racing, but the sport.
So, I love Saratoga. Saratoga is my favorite track. It's meaningful to me. My wife also grew up here. Our silks are gold with a blue lightning bolt because my mother-in-law and my father-in-law, my mother-in-law coached lacrosse, Sue Hoffman. She coached up here for like 25, 30 years, was a phenomenal coach, set all kinds of records. And then my father-in-law is also a coach and a teacher up here. And my wife and my sister-in-law both taught as substitutes at the high school. So that's what our silks are from. So I love it up here. But I will say I love Aqueduct. So one of the things, I live in Battery Park City, and just get on the A train, 30 minutes, takes nice and easy, listen to some music or whatever, a podcast, get there. I love the Long Shots Bar. Is, I think, so much fun. It's just got all this energy. It's just people that love the sport. Like, the one thing about Aqueduct is that the fans there are the realest fans in the sport. They're so knowledgeable. They get the game. Like, they'll be watching a race at Gulfstream, and they'll pick up on something that I won't even, that, like, and I've been in this game for a while. Like, they're just very, very, very knowledgeable fans. So I love the, I mean, obviously there are parts of Aqueduct that are a little bit depressing because it's a little bit older, but it's just the energy that you get of, like, a serious fan base that I think is good. But
And, you know, also there's a lot of folks there that stay for the winter, and I think it keeps a lot of the barns going, certainly, so we appreciate the winter
racing. It's important.
Racing.
Yeah, it's important because, you know, you have a lot of barns like that, like you said, especially some of the smaller barns. You know, you can't, like, I love Chad Brown, I love Todd Pletcher, I have horses with Christoph, I love Christoph, but, like, you need to have, like, if they're just winning all the races, you know, you're going to lose those smaller trainers, like, and you need those smaller trainers to be around to help fill fields and stuff. So having that 3 days a week in January, February, March, where some of those trainers can make a little bit of money, and the purses are good in the winter. So it's important for sure.
Very important. No question about it. And I wanted, you know, as a NYTHA board member, appreciate your addressing that a little bit. And Rob, before we let you go, again, checking your Twitter feed, you kind of gave a tip of the cap to a horse that, I don't know whether it's your first horse, but you were in. We're going to pull up a replay from Gulfstream Park, the Bonnie Miss, Just Whistle Dixie. Yeah. She's going to be the number six horse here. You tipped your cap to her because she, of course, produced Mahayman. Mahayman as a sire, sired a winner of the Sorrento Elm Drive out at Del Mar a few days ago. So it's got to be fun to have a horse like this and be an owner and then kind of follow the bloodlines down the pike as well. But talk a little bit about being in, as they say, was this your first
it was one of my first, it was my first big investment with her. She was $400,000. I bought a piece of her. It was a big investment for me. I remember specifically getting off of the 95, turning onto Hollandale Beach Boulevard, and Everlong came on by the Foo Fighters. It was one of my favorite songs, and I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it. Like, I was just so fired up for this race. Like, I always thought she was going to, you know, she was heavily favored. She'd been doing really well. She had just won the Devona Dale. And this is her Bonnie Miss win, going a mile and an eighth. And she was just really special. She actually, we went to the Oaks as second favorite. The favorite was a filly you probably haven't heard of named Rachel Alexandra. The rumor is that, so we get to the track that day for Oaks Day. And, you know, we're feeling good about ourselves. We're feeling good about ourselves. We had five wins in a row at the point. It was like Rachel versus us. Rachel was going to be favorable. We were like 5-2. And we saw Rachel train that day, and it was like all the air came out of the balloon, like, ooh, okay. And then that morning, or we get to the track for Oaks Day, and at 2 o'clock, she scratched out of the race. She kicked her stall. I think, personally, I think she saw Rachel Alexandra train and was
done.
Like, I'm not racing. I kicked my foot. I'm done. But it was the highs and lows of racing because it was so much fun going into that. And then, you know Terry Finley well.
Yeah.
Terry's a prankster. And so for the first 3 seconds, because it came over the PA, like, there was no cell phone service. It happened, like, last minute. So I heard about it on the PA. And I remember the first 3 seconds, I was like, this is the worst practical joke Terry's ever pulled. And then it occurred to me that it was, in fact, not a practical joke. But she was so much fun. And we had such a great run with her. And then she's gone on to be just a, you know, a queen of a broodmare.
But again, you're a poster child for folks who kind of get introduced to the game through the partnerships and then, you know, learn the game that way, go off on their own. And again, I'll tout once again the Empire Racing Club, which allows you to get in and kind of really get a reasonable look at the game and then maybe move on. We have Bonaventure is one of our sponsors. They have a nice little partnership. Their partnerships, we should mention
they
that as well.
They do a great
job. At all different levels.
If you're
thinking about it, research a little bit because they run the gamut.
I've owned 1% of a horse with West Point, and I've owned 100% of horses. And two things. One is it's all the same when they win. And honestly, it's more fun when it's 1% because then you have a big group of people that you celebrate with.
Yeah.
Like, it's so much more fun that way. So I'm a big proponent of, like, do it at a level you're comfortable with and have fun with it.
Very good. Rob, got to wrap things up. We appreciate the visit. It was a lot of fun. Again, we'll be looking for Now You Can't Leave this afternoon and some other winners as the meet progresses. But as I say, appreciate it. Congratulations on the winner yesterday, and good luck on the remainder of the meet.
Thank you very much, Seth. Appreciate it.
Rob Masiello, we'll take a break. When we come back, Nicole Russo, we'll talk a little sales, all of that right after this. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the West. I'm Scott Varley at Saratoga's latest and greatest high-rise luxury condo. Starting in the mid-fives, every condo here has 2 bedrooms and 2 baths and upgrades, just like this. Check out these oversized private balconies. We also have a gym, a private lounge, and get this, a heated parking garage. To make a reservation for your private condo at the West, call or text me. I'm Scott Varley at 518-281-6808.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play. With easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport, it's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement. From world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
For 4 generations and looking forward to a 5th, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922, 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Welcome back to Racing Across America, the Friday the 13th edition, but we're making it a lucky Friday the 13th, so stay tuned. As I promised before the break, our friend Nicole Russo from the Daily Racing Forum, but as I said earlier, formerly from the Saratogian, so a lot of folks locally familiar with Nicole, but she covers sales and breeding as part of her beat for the Daily Racing Forum. So I thought we'd talk a little sales for Monday and Tuesday, preview upcoming Sunday and Monday. Nicole, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And before we jump into sales, why don't you take us through, because I first met you when you were right down the street at the Saratogian. Take us to the evolution, what took you from the Saratogian and now brought you over to the Daily Racing Forum.
I've always followed the horses. I'm one of those very lucky people who's had the opportunity to follow my passion through my life. I knew I wanted to combine writing and racing, my two passions, and I went to journalism school in my hometown of Rochester, New York, with the idea that I was going to do that. Came to the Saratogian straight out of college for Brian Bouyer, who's now with the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame. We're still dear friends. Moved down to Lexington, Kentucky in 2012 to work for another former Saratogian, Tom Law, and Mark Simon at the Thoroughbred Times. And when that publication sadly shuttered, RIP Thoroughbred Times, hello to all the alumni out there, I was lucky enough to move over to Daily Racing Forum, where I've been since late 2012, based out of Lexington.
Very good. And of course, you're up here in the box with Mike and Dave, Mike Welch and Dave Granig, and you've been doing some of the stakes recaps and whatnot. But as I say, also in town, obviously covering the sale. Let's just get an overview before we talk specifically about last Monday and Tuesday. Obviously, the pandemic last year changed the entire sales scene. But we were talking about during the handicapping show, and my co-host, Anthony Mormino, said the sales are a little bit of a barometer of the industry. And last year, with the situation with the pandemic, there was certainly, you know, people couldn't attend. And so there was a lot of online things and sales being postponed or canceled. Obviously, this one didn't take place last year. Talk about last year, how the sales season progressed through the pandemic and how we're coming out of it this year.
Sure. Well, I think the biggest impact you saw because of the pandemic last year was that really had its onset during the two-year-old sale season. And that was what, obviously, you know, the market across the board was impacted, but I think the two-year-old guys really took the worst of it. Their calendar was really shuffled. The market was very uncertain. People held
it
back.
It hit right in that two-year-old sale season.
I mean, yeah. The first sale of the season, the OBS March sale, had its opening session on the day they announced the Kentucky Derby would be postponed. So, I mean, that gives you the context for, I mean, it hit right in the middle of that season. So people really held back. Also, you know, people are looking to buy horses out of those sales and go to the races in the summer. And we didn't know what the racing calendar was going to look like. So I think those guys were hit the hardest. And then, you know, as you look at the domino effect, you know, the two-year-old pinhookers had such a hard time of it that they didn't come out into the yearling season as much as they would have. The other major impact on the yearling season was just the lack of travel. I think these sale companies and consigners did the best they could with presenting walking videos online, you know, being available remotely, making online bidding available. There are a lot of innovations that I think were terrific and that are going to stick with us. But when it comes to a young horse with no prior race record, with nothing, there's really nothing that can replace seeing the horse in person, bidding on the horse in person. And we really had a domestic-focused marketplace last year, which was very good for the domestic buyers, but there was some of that competition missing that might have driven numbers upward. So I think that was the other big impact. Now, as we're not out of the pandemic, but, you know, able to resume some more normal trade, we had a very good two-year-old season. I think people were really excited to go out to acquire racehorses to go to the races this year. And we've seen that momentum carrying over. We've only had two sales thus far, but early into the yearling season. So I think we've seen a promising turnaround of one of those two negative pandemic trends. And I think coming up at Keeneland September next month back in Lexington, which is really the sale that brings the most international buyers to the U.S., I think we're hoping to see the return of some of that international money and competition with travel becoming a bit easier.
Yeah, as you say, just practically speaking, the two-year-old sales, people do buy thinking, hey, we'll come to Saratoga in the summer. And with things being in flux last year, it certainly played into the two-year-old sales, just beyond the psychology of it, just beyond what physically was happening as well. But it's nice to see things kind of getting back to normal. Again, doing the sales beat, you go to a lot of these sales, and I'm just curious to get your take on, I always say, I tell people, if you're going to come up to Saratoga, make it sales week, because the Monday and Tuesday over there, just a lot of fun. And I think for a lot of folks locally who maybe aren't even big horse racing fans, they show up for the social scene. So just as a person who's been to a lot of the sales, compare the social scene over there on Monday and Tuesday.
Well, I think, the Saratoga sale, every sale kind of has its own feel. And I think the Saratoga sale, as you noted, really sort of is its own beast. You know, people come over, now we're on the dark days, now that we have two dark days, but the first session used to be after the races. Yeah. So people come over straight from the races or straight from town and, you know, kind of hang out in that open air back area. I was actually very glad this year they restricted the access to the pavilion itself a bit, which, you know, was a good thing because of the ongoing pandemic, yeah. But also good because every year it seems we have somebody waving at their friend and accidentally bidding on $1 million horse. So I'm sure we were glad not to have that this year. But so it really is just sort of a unique beast here in Saratoga. And because of the history of the sale, this year was the centennial edition, yeah, of the Fasig Tipton Saratoga Select sale. And you look a bit at the timeline and the horses that have gone through this ring from, you know, Man O' War to Raise a Native to American Pharoah, and you know the list of Kentucky Derby winners, I believe 8 or 9 that have come out of this sale. And so you sort of never know what future star you're going to see and say, you know, and say I saw them when. So if you're really a horse person and you love following these horses their whole lives as much as I do, that's one thing I really love about the sales. You know, it's the sales are a unique event to come out to because you never know what little piece of history you're going to get to have witnessed.
Let's talk specifically about some of the horses that came out of the sale and attracted either next to or 7-figure prices, because these are horses that aren't named yet, so you'll have to look up the breeding and whatnot and kind of keep track of them, but it'll be fun to do. And the first one, I'm not sure if the guys have the video of this, because I don't think I called for the video of this because it didn't get to $1 million, but at 990,000, it was the top filly on Monday night. West Point picked up a daughter of Tappet from Check Up, from Z-Neck Up, and again, $990,000. Sibling is undefeated, a Caribbean Caper, 3 for 3, including a win at Ellis Park a few weeks ago as well. But talk a little bit about this one for West Point.
Yeah, well, you know, West Point had a really active sale, yeah, buying, you know, a number of nice horses. And again, that interest to get back to the racehorse from people and from partnerships and to get involved in the racing game. And, you know, Tappet's really having another outstanding year. I think, you know, if you follow the game casually, you might see him overshadowed a little bit by the Into Mischiefs and, you know, some of these other horses. But Tappet this year with Essential Quality, that was his, yeah, fourth Belmont Stakes winner, and no stallion in the modern era has done that. You have to go all the way back to Lexington in Civil War times to find a stallion who has sired that many Belmont Stakes winners. It's just a remarkable, remarkable accomplishment. And, you know, as you can see, Tappet continues to be sought after commercially as a result.
Just under $1 million for that filly. There was a colt a little bit later on Monday, though, that attracted $1.6 million from the Lowe's, a son of Uncle Mo from Dame Dorothy. That makes this one a Sibling to Spice Is Nice. So there's some nice black type on the page there.
Yeah, and you know, Jacob West purchased this one on behalf of Robert and Luana Lowe. They're clients of Todd Pletcher's. This colt going to go to Todd Pletcher also, and for good reason. I mean, you know, Todd Pletcher trained Uncle Mo. He trained Dame Dorothy, who is a grade one winner. He trains her first foal, Spices Nice, a grade three winner this year. A lot of familiarity with the family. No surprise that this one was a 7-figure yearling. Spices Nice herself was a 7-figure yearling. And this one, you know, going back into the pipeline for Todd Pletcher and for the Lowe's.
And again, it'll be interesting to watch these, you know, we may see her up here, you know, sooner rather than later once the racing career starts with those kind of connections. So again, keep in mind Uncle Mo and Dame Dorothy. We'll see what the name winds up to be, but it'll be fun to watch as we go forward. I'm interested to get your opinion here. This was OXO and Larry Best, night number 2, hip number 132. By Bolt the Oro, out a lot of Kim. That makes this a sibling to Rachel Alexandra. 1.4 million. Larry likes to lay out the cash, and he did for this one, but again, a sibling to Rachel Alexandra. But my question is also, is Bolt the Oro a sire that we should start watching now, brand new on the scene, or was this a little bit of an aberration?
You know, I think a bit of both. Bolt d'Oro, a multiple grade one winning son of Medaglia d'Oro, you know, a grade one winner at two. Precocity is often valued in this American marketplace. A very well-built horse. A horse who's getting a ton of support at Spendthrift Farm, as you see from his books, getting the Dam of Rachel Alexandra in his first book, these his first yearlings. Spendthrift Farm, also in one of his later years here at stud, has already sent their Starmare and Beholder to him. You know, and those are just kind of the top names and books that have been very, very good. So I think he is a stallion to watch. He has all the credentials. He's gotten all the support he needs. Even if you take this horse out of the mix, his sales average is doing very, very well against what his first year stud fee was. And those are kind of the statistics you want to look at. That said, I mean, you bring in a half sibling to a Hall of Fame race mare and you're going to get the bids. So this one was a bit of an outlier. You know, I don't think he would have had a seven figure horse in this competitive sale. Otherwise, he was the only first year sire to attract one, which shows you what the level of competition is. So this horse, something of an outlier, but he does have all the credentials to be a stallion to watch.
Yeah, and if folks don't remember, broke the maiden in the career debut at Del Mar back in 2017. Second career start, he wins the Del Mar Futurity. Third career start, he goes over to Santa Anita and wins the front runner. Ran third in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, but a couple of grade ones in the first three career starts. So it'll be interesting to see. And I said, we were talking about the sale on the show a few days ago, and I said, the sale going over and kind of just enjoying the fun and the scene and whatnot, but looking through the book as the evening goes along, kind of when I got into the game, got me interested in the breeding. And now I really love the two-year-old races up here and looking up the breeding and seeing what sires are a little bit hot with first-time starters. So Bolt d'Oro may be one of those that, as these horses make it to the track, pay attention for the first few starters and see if he will be one of those sires that has some precocious runners. Because, again, it's kind of fun to look at the catalogs and whatnot and look at the breeding. That'll pull you into that side of the game a little bit, which I think plays into the two-year-old races up here. 160 was a daughter of Quality Road, $1 million, top filly on Tuesday night, out of Above Perfect. That makes this one a sibling to Always Dreaming and Hot Dixie Chick. So, again, there was a nice black type in the book this week.
Well, and I think, you know, you when you learn a little bit more about the breeding game, what really played into this filly's value was her residual value as a broodmare. I think, you know,
I just had Rob Masiello on, and he said, you know, I've kind of switched to buying fillies because of the residual value.
Yeah, and you know, that is never going to go away on the page. You know, she has no downside. You know, she's when you look at this horse as a sale prospect, if she goes out and is a stakes performer, she can enhance her family's value. But the value that's already on the page is never going to go away, because certainly her Dam Above Perfection, you know, the Dam of three graded stakes winners, including a Derby winner, and one of those being Hot Dixie Chick, who's already the Dam of two stakes winners, including Pauline's Pearl, who ran in the Oaks this year. Just tremendous residual value. And I have to say, I really, really liked this filly. She really just had a wonderful air of calmness about her, took everything in stride with such class. And this is a big environment for a young horse.
Yeah, with the backyard and then in the sales pavilion as well. Let's get some thoughts on the sales topper. It was hip number 168 by Into Mischief. And again, if you don't pay attention, Into Mischief as a sire is one that you clearly have to pay attention to, with precocious runners as well, but comes out of Paola Queen and attracted $2.6 million for this yearling colt.
Yeah, and again, you know, people look at the residual value on these young horses and they come in and you know, Coolmore, not only looking at this horse and saying, hey, he's by a leading sire and a classic sire and out of a grade one winner, has all the credentials to be a racehorse, but should he be a racehorse, he has all the credentials to be a stallion for our huge operation. They already stand Into Mischief's son, Practical Joke, who's made such a good start with his first crop with the Sanford winner, Wit, here opening weekend at Saratoga. Into Mischief's son, Golden Sense, who stands alongside him at Spendthrift Farm, one of the leading sires for his class at every point of his career thus far. So, you know, Into Mischief, not just siring racehorses, he's siring sires, and that's going to play in with his sons in this marketplace.
Just before we let you go, we talked a little bit about Into Mischief, Bolt d'Oro, maybe one to watch as well. I'll get some thoughts on a couple other sires and and how they've worked out so far this year. These are a little more experienced runners as far as having some crops already, but a gun runner who seems to be really intriguing, and Constitution, who over the last few years has been notable as well. What's their situation this year in the sales?
Sure. Well, Constitution is sort of seeing the curve, I think, we see from a lot of young stallions. The way sort of the bell curve or inverse bell curve works is when a young stallion comes to stud, his first year, you know, farms and his supporters and his owners are going to do everything they can to get him the best mares, to get him off to a great start at stud. You know, and then maybe the next year, you know, or the year after, the quality of mares, the number of mares, a little bit lesser at both, you know, as farms go to support their incoming sire class, the wheel always keeps turning. But then as people wait for his runners to prove themselves out on the track, Constitution, of course, had that smashing first crop highlighted by Tis the Law and a couple of other graded winners. And then, you know, his second, his third crops of two-year-olds, he's been not unsuccessful, but certainly not success to the degree of a multiple grade one winner. So he's gotten a little cooler on the track and in the sales ring as a result. But because of his early success, you know, last year, I'm sure he got a ton of terrific mares as a result of Tis the Law's success, who will then be, you know, the yearlings of next year and the year after. So you can see that swing back up. If you go back and look at Tap It, at Uncle Mo, at a number of these stallions, you see that, where they had a strong first year, cooled off the second and third years, and then began the climb right back up. So Gunrunner is a stallion where these are his first two-year-olds now. He's a stallion where he's eligible to, you know, sort of see that change next year in 2022 and the year after. But, man, the way Gunrunner's first crop is running, you know, he had grade two winners on both coasts last weekend at Del Mar and at Saratoga. He's got a couple of entrants in the Saratoga special this weekend. You know, Gunrunner, just remarkable success from a remarkable racehorse. And, you know, I think we'll continue to see that reflected in the sales ring in coming years.
And I like the description there, the inverse bell curve. And if folks are just kind of getting into the game and looking at breeding, that is certainly worth noting, because that first crop, they take off. And then I think a lot of people think, oh, what happened in this year? But that, you explained it very well. Year two and year three, they're kind of waiting for the runners, and maybe the better mares are going to the new faces, the new stars. And so then you get to that fourth crop and things can kind of to rebound a little bit, and worth watching.
And it's a business, and you're considering, you know, as the farm, gee, if I have, you know, and this is a small number, there are far more horses than this, but if I have 20 mares, maybe 10 of them are going to support my new stallion and the others are going to be spread out a bit. And gee, the next year, here's my incoming stallion who needs the bulk of support. Yeah. So, you know, so it is a business on the breeding side, but then on the handicapping side, it can pay in if you look at these horses and go, gosh, these are the foals that were conceived in 2016 for Uncle Mo after Nyquist had his champion two-year-old season. These might be really good two-year-olds to keep an eye on. So if you're following that and keeping track of when foals were conceived and born, you know, you can say, gee, these might be really nice runners by this stallion this year.
Yeah, I like that, because again, it will play into those two-year-old races up here at Saratoga. Nicole, we're up against the clock a little bit, but I will get some thoughts if people want to go over. And again, if you didn't make it, I always say Monday and Tuesday, if you're going to make a visit up to the track, you know, for folks who come in from out of town, do it sales week. Sales are so much fun. But if folks didn't make it Monday or Tuesday, a little more relaxed, but still fun if people want to go over on Sunday and Monday and watch the New York Breds.
Yeah, and the New York Breds, I think this is another marketplace where, you know, again, number one, we talk about what horses might you see. Tis the Law went through the New York Bred sale. New York Breds are not just horses that are running in New York State anymore. They compete successfully against open company around the country and around the world. And I think they're also looking for a really good sale in the momentum we've seen in this yearling marketplace. As we said, last year, the sales in Saratoga had to be scrapped, and the New York Bred program, they really had a hard time of that because they have to take their horses out of state and present them to a different marketplace to sell. So they don't only see that immediate financial impact of trying to market the horse where maybe you didn't originally intend to, but also the ongoing impact of, gosh, now this horse is going to run out of the region and maybe I'm not eligible for as many breeders awards because of that. So there was, you know, a devastating immediate and long-term impact for the New York Bred breeders and consigners last year. I think they're really, thrilled, you know, to have this sale back in New York State in Saratoga, you know, and to present their yearlings, you know, to sort of their intended marketplace. There were a handful of New York breds who won in the select sale earlier this week who did very well against quote unquote open company. And that shows you, you know, the demand for New York breds. And I think we'll see very good numbers, you know, continuing for them at their dedicated sale this coming Sunday and Monday.
Yeah, it's a great program. We hit on a little bit on it with Rob Masiello. It's a great program, certainly. The New York bred sale coming up on Sunday and Monday. And again, folks are invited. If you're not familiar, there's the backyard with an open air bar, and you can go and watch the horses in the paddock. I highly recommend it, as they say, the Sunday and Monday New York bred sale. A little more low-key, although the past few years that's been pretty popular too. But folks are certainly invited to come up and enjoy that on Sunday and Monday, Sunday after the races, or dark day on Monday. Nicole, we'll let you go. When you sat down, you said you're on your way to look at some stallions and over to the sales ring. You can check out Nicole's work in the Daily Racing Form or DRF.com online. Nicole Russo, appreciate the visit.
Thank you for having me. Great to be back in Saratoga.
Absolutely. All right, we'll take a break when we come back. Again, taped an interview yesterday with Michelle Giangiulio. Got her first career win in a stakes at Saratoga on Wednesday. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
Turf, 14 of them across the track. Heels set on their way. End of the dance on the outside. Broke a little sideways with Bro KK, but meanwhile it's going to be Steinman but running on now, and Somali Lemonade's got eight to make up. They come to the top of the lane. Stops shopping. Maria's got a lot left. Stops shopping. Maria goes on. Sweet Cat is right there. Hard not to like. Royal Body is running on. Past the eight ball, they come. Stops shopping. Maria for the run. Still under a hand ride as they come to the 16th. Stephanie's Kitten coming out late. Yes, Stephanie's Kitten coming fast. Stephanie's Kitten, stop jumping over here. Stephanie's Kitten's water.
Chances broke smartly, but so did Terra from the Cape. On the inside, Sky Lantern the Grey going well. If he can get through, can get through. Sky Lantern the Grey looking for somewhere to run. Wide open. It's Terra from the Cape hanging on. Terra from the Cape tries to go all the way. On the outside now, here comes Flotilla in the light blue. Flotilla is absolutely flying. Watch the chances in there too. But Flotilla has gone right on by. And Flotilla is coming home to score. Flotilla has won at just about two in the end. It'll be Watch the Chances, Summer of Fun, coming on to finish there.
Maybe the year of the female trainer, getting great starts up here at Saratoga. Earlier in the meet, we had Carrie Bryan, who in her first start at Saratoga, she had starts prior, but in her first Saratoga start, won the grade one jump race early in the meet. And on Wednesday in the Evan Shipman, it was Michelle Giangiulio getting her first career win in a stakes race at Saratoga. Michelle, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Let's reflect a little bit. We will pull the stretch run here, and it is going to be in the Evan Shipman on Wednesday. Number three, Seafoam, takes them all the way around. Just reflect on the situation. You have limited number of starters. I believe this was the sixth career start.
Yep.
First career win, stakes race at Saratoga. How special is that?
Oh, man, it's a dream come true. It's just like, it's so surreal. I still don't even know what to say, how to feel. It's just, it's amazing. Incredible feeling.
And as I say, he was pretty much wire to wire. Joel Rosario on board. I'm assuming, you know, this is a horse that has some early speed. Mr. Buff also has some early speed, but this horse took the lead pretty much from the start. I'm assuming that was kind of the game plan, the instructions to Rosario as well.
Yeah, you know, Joel, he's a professional. I'm not going to tell him much. I just said break and go. You know, he says, that's the only way the horse runs. I said, you know him better than I do. So I said, you know, do your thing. And it worked out really good.
What was your confidence level going around the track?
Oh, and I saw he went 24 and change. And, I mean, he went 48 flat, but he was going so comfortably on the lead. And he had him a nice loose rein, just the way he likes to go. I was just, my heart was pounding a mile a minute, but I was just like, you know, just come on, keep going. You know, where's the wire? And he just opened up down the stretch, man.
He got a little bit engaged.
He did. I was a little worried. You know, three jokers come on the outside. I didn't know if he was going to kick in or not. And, man, he just refired again. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was an incredible, as they say, first victory to the career. What a good-looking performance. And even more incredible, it was only about a week and a half or so ago he was claimed, so moves into your barn off of that. And as I say, kind of a quick turnaround, but what was the game plan after the claim to try the Evan Shipman?
I mean, it wasn't really planned to run him back like that. You know, we were probably going to run him in an allowance or something, you know, kind of what we were talking about doing. But, you know, we saw the nominees for this race, and, you know, the racing office contacted me about it and asked me if I wanted to go in. And so, you know, we might as well take a shot. And I contacted Marshall and Anthony, and they said, yeah, let's go for it. It was, you know, there was a bunch of entries, but somebody told me Espeason wasn't going in with his three. And those were, like, he has a couple that I was a little worried about. And, you know, Mr. Buff was our biggest competitor, and, you know, he didn't really show up yesterday. So we got lucky.
Yeah, one mountain to climb in a short field, took advantage of the situation. And I sent some pictures in earlier that I had taken yesterday, and maybe the guys can show those if we have them ready. But I got the winner's circle. I got you and the horse. I got you with the trophy presentation. And then, of course, you and Acacia, a nice little spot on Fox Sports.
So yeah.
Just again,
yeah,
reflect on post-race. First career win and getting a situation like this. Just incredible.
It really is. It's a dream come true.
And as I say, a little shot on Fox Sports as well. So a very nice way to kind of kick off the Saratoga career. We've mentioned Marshall a couple of times, claimed and goes for 10 strike racing. And I was talking before we went on the air, and Steve Bick and I always have Marshall sit in to talk a little bit when he's up here. And we had him on this past week. And one of the things he talked about was he has horses with a lot of different trainings, but he talked about bringing some newer trainers in and helping them get started. Talk about working with 10 Strike and Marshall.
Oh, man, it's been so much fun being with them. I actually recently had his daughter was helping me for a couple weeks before she left for college. She was hot walking for me, and he was, like, so excited about it to have her involved, and she did really good. It was a lot of fun. But Marshall's been a huge help. I mean, I wouldn't be here without him, you know. He's been so great sending me a couple horses to help me get going and claiming a few and bringing in other partners. And you know, we've known each other for a long time and you know, ran a lot of horses together, and we have won a lot of races together, just not under my name. Yeah. But I'm just really fortunate to be a part of it.
Yeah, great guy, fun guy, smart guy. We've said it before, people haven't seen him on the show. He's a contest player, he's a college professor, a numbers guy.
He does it
all. His Twitter account, he's got things analyzed.
I think that doesn't even make sense to me. It's like another language, some things that he writes on Twitter, but it's just, you know, he's good at what he does.
Absolutely.
That's for sure.
Give us a little bit of your background. Just doing some of my own research, you've been in the barns of a number of different trainers kind of before you went out on your own, so give us a little bit of the background.
Well, I originally started on a farm in New Jersey. I grew up on a farm in New Jersey as well, but I originally started in the show world, and I was there for, you know, quite a while, most of my teenage years. And then I ended up starting with Carlos Guerrero, who's, you know, part of my family. He's basically my uncle through marriage. And, you know, he taught me everything. He really did. He was my biggest mentor.
Park Space,
I'm sure,
right?
People, yeah, Park Space, yeah. I've heard me say it many, many times, but he's, you know, taught me more than anyone ever has. But then I moved on and came up to New York, and I worked for Chad Brown. I went to Joe Sharp. I worked for Morley for a few years. You know, there's quite a few trainers I went through, and, you know, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be where I am now. You know, you always learn a little by little from everybody and kind of put your own program together. So it's been working out really good.
I was going to say, if you go through a number of trainers like that, all prominent guys, all successful guys, I assume you do pick up a little bit from everybody and then kind of meld it into your own.
Yeah.
And go from there.
Yeah, it's neat. It's neat being involved in different programs. You know, you see things that you don't like, you see things you do like, and you really do develop your own kind of system that you see, you know, works for certain horses. And I really am grateful for the years that I put in. You know, I'm glad that I didn't just like rush into it. I'm glad I put the work in, and it's really paying off.
You mentioned grew up on a farm. Is that how you got into the game, got interested in horse racing?
Yeah, so when I was a kid, I grew up, actually, my grandfather and my dad actually used to breed thoroughbreds, Jersey breds, on my farm. We actually used to foal the babies on my farm. And they kind of got out of it. You know, it's very difficult in the breeding program. They got out of it when I was like 8 or 9. So I wasn't involved in it too much when I was a kid. I mean, we had them on the farm and I dealt with them, but I wasn't really involved in the racing so much. My parents kind of kept me on the show world side, and, you know, I enjoyed the show horses, but it just wasn't really getting me anywhere. It was just, you know, always the one that ended up being the hard worker on the farm, taking care of everything rather than being at the shows. And I just thought to myself, I was like, I don't think this is for me anymore. I just got to a point where I wanted something else. And when I got to the racing, it was just like, this is where I want to be. I knew right away, once I started learning everything and I was picking up on it so fast, and I couldn't get enough of it. I wanted to learn more and more every day.
That's a perfect segue, because I always say in here probably 10 times a week, when we're up here at Saratoga and we're doing these morning shows from the backstretch, I think we get a brand new audience. There are the regulars, certainly, but a lot of people who are new to the game, a lot of young people who are maybe interested in the game. So take us through. You've already alluded to it. You don't just automatically become a trainer. You kind of have to work your way up through the barns and whatnot. So take us through the process of when you first step in and give folks who may be interested in thinking, hey, trainer, that sounds like a great idea, what the steps are that you have to go through before you get there.
I kind of fell into it as far as like jobs not working out. And I was just really, I actually had a really good assistant job with Horacio de Paz, but I was to the point where I just didn't want to be an assistant anymore. I really just wanted to do my own thing. For so long, I wanted to do my own thing. And I was just to the point where I was like, it's time. You know, it was just, Things just weren't working out quite as well. And I'm like, this is time. And, you know, I contacted Marshall and I said, you know, how can we get things going? And I was like, I really need some help. And he really, really, I mean, I'm just so grateful that he sent me a horse and sent me two, actually. The first one that I ran got claimed, obviously. And then we were trying to claim a couple and losing shakes. And then he sent me another one. And that's how we got the ball rolling a little bit. But, you know, it's a long process becoming a trainer.
I mean, it starts,
and getting owners.
I'm sure to begin, you're, you know, shooting hay out. And,
oh, I still
and work,
am.
Work your way out.
Yeah, I still am. I'm cleaning stalls and galloping every morning. I mean, I'm still grooming and galloping.
So you get on the horses.
Yeah,
too.
I do everything. Okay. Yeah, I don't have any employees right now. I have one groom that comes and helps me later in the morning. But yeah, I'm a one man show.
Excellent. Excellent. And you know, you had the win. Your first career win was the stakes race. But so far, 6 starts, you haven't been out of the trifecta yet. A win,
I know.
3 seconds and a couple of thirds. You have Joey Looselips on Friday afternoon. We wish you good luck there.
Thanks.
On the finale as well. But it's a great start to the career. And I pulled up the Equibase stats last night. And besides the stakes win, you're 1 win, 1 second, 1 third, and 3 starts at Saratoga. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. You know, that one on opening day was a little disappointing. I thought that he was going to win, and the track ended up being really heavy. And he got, you know, he ended up pretty quick pace. And, it, you know, he still ran really well. I was happy. 11-way shake, which was, you know, kind of cool to have that happen. And it was, everybody was watching. And so that was neat. But, yeah, they've all been running so well. I had the 1 second back at Belmont with the filly I claimed off of Ismusen. She ran really, really well off the claim, and Irad rode her, and he was very happy with how she ran, and he like really wants to ride her back. So it's just been really, really cool to be involved with all the big guys and like just to be noticed and, you know, people realizing who I am. And it's just been great. I'm soaking it all in.
Yeah, well, Wednesday certainly will do that. You win a stakes race up at Saratoga.
Yeah.
You add to the story of your first career win. How many horses do you have right now?
I have 5.
And are you New York based all year long?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I love the winter racing. Not many people do, but I love it. Never been south for the winter, so, you know, I don't mind the winters. And I think you have a huge advantage in the wintertime. You know, good money, and races are a little bit less competitive. And I just love the New York bred programs as well. So I'm excited for going into the winter this year. Hopefully we can build up a little bit and get a good string going.
Talk a little bit about, though, Saratoga, and obviously working for the various people you've been to other tracks and other venues as well. But talk a little bit about Saratoga, particularly this year with the fans coming back and to have the nice start to the season with the three in the money finishes with three starters. What's it like in front of the fans again?
Oh, it's so cool, especially yesterday after the race. I mean, just people coming at me that never seen before.
I asked you to be on in the winner's circle. As you walked out of the winner's circle, there was probably six people
there.
Oh,
it was crazy. I mean, I was getting surrounded by reporters and everything. It's just, I've won races before for other trainers and stuff like that, but, you know, it's just not the same for yourself. It was just absolutely epic. Just an incredible feeling.
Yeah. And Saratoga fans are so knowledgeable. Yeah. I think everybody, you know, that group of people outside the winner's circle, I think people realize the situation. That certainly makes it extra fun, no question about it. Before you sat down, we were talking a little bit. Your base right across the street here at the harness track, and I asked if you ever used clear court, and you said sometimes. You ask people about that, trainers, and a lot of them say, you said maybe it's weather-related sometimes. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of trainers say it's also kind of a different mental aspect for horses as compared to going over to the main track of the Oklahoma. This is a little more relaxed.
Some of them are more relaxed here. Actually, the one filly I have, she doesn't handle it well out here because, like, if I'm taking her out here to jog, you're all going the right way. Horses galloping by you. But some of them really do like it. You can just do nice, easy gallops out there. And, you know, when it's not crowded out there, it's nice. You know, sometimes you can get the track to yourself, which is great. It's a good little track to have, especially if you're just going to go out and jog or something. You know, you don't have to go on the big track around all the traffic and everything. So it's a handy track to be nearby.
It makes the most of the Saratoga atmosphere. Speaking of that, and I had it up in my notes, I should have talked about it when we talked about the race, but I'll hit on it now. Seafoam, boy, this is a nice horse that you guys claim. And get another stakes win. That's the ninth win in 23 career starts. But what's notable at Saratoga, now four wins and six starts. Do you believe in horse for a course?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, they get happy in certain places, and I think this is where he really likes it. And he came out of that race, I claimed him out of, like, it was nothing. That's really why I decided to go into the race. You know, if he was, like, really tired and wasn't eating, then I definitely wouldn't have gone in. But he ate up that night. Next morning, he was bright and happy and dragging me around when I was walking him. And I was like, man, this horse came out of this race really well. And he actually gave me a fat lip. I was on the track. He popped me right in the face. I said, I think he's ready to run now. He was all excited out there. He came off the track with a bloody face.
But, you know, you forgave him after. But as I say, you picked up a nice horse, a nice New York bred stakes winner. So there are plenty of opportunities going forward with the New York bred program, as you say. Anything in particular you have in mind for him, or is it too soon to?
Yeah, I haven't looked yet. I'm not sure. He seemed to come out of this race really well, too. He was very happy this morning, ate up everything. He's just a monster of a racehorse, man. Just what a beast.
Yeah, like I say, nice record, and certainly a nice record up here as well. Again, on Friday afternoon, you have Joey Looselips in the finale. We wish you a lot of good luck there. Certainly wish you a lot of good luck going forward with the remainder of the meet after a very good start. And career win number one in the stakes race at Saratoga. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Michelle Giangiulio, again, what a great start to a Saratoga career that we look forward to watching in the future as well. All right, stay tuned. We will be back with more Loose on our Racing Across America right after this.
For four generations and looking forward to a fifth, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922, 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Thank you.
best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them, Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Friday the 13th. We will wrap things up. Do want to thank Michelle Giangiulio. Again, we taped her yesterday after the nice win on Wednesday. First career win at Saratoga, and she wins a stakes race. Just a fun story. Nicole Russo, appreciate her coming in, doing a little recap of the sale Monday and Tuesday night, a little preview of Sunday and Monday's New York bred sale. And Rob Masiello, top of the show from NYTHA. He's on the board there, but also one of the prominent owners in New York, and that you see his horses entered, including Now's Use Can't Leave, a little bit later this afternoon. So we wish him good luck there and appreciate everybody stopping by. Don't forget, today, the bounty bet returns $978 up for grabs with the bounty bet. All you have to do is play the late pick five with your Capital OTB bet account, and you're in for all or part, potentially, of that bounty if you hit the late pick five. Today at the Clubhouse Racebook, a $100 trifecta challenge. Tomorrow, the Saratoga Syndicate. But again, the syndicate's full by now. I mentioned it because we open on Sundays. First come, first serve. Syndicate allows you to get in on a big pick ticket on a Saturday for a modest amount of money. So if you'd like to get in for next week, check out the website, capitalotb.com, on Sunday. Tomorrow, there's also a $100 pick three bankroll. I will have that. Check the website to put your name in the hat, throw your name in the hat to potentially get on the pick three bankroll team tomorrow. Tomorrow also a play the board contest at the Clubhouse Racebook. A show pool bankroll coming up on Sunday. Again, the website is available to toss your name in the ring for that bankroll. And Sunday there's a pick four promotion and a match bet at the Clubhouse Racebook. And speaking of the Clubhouse Racebook, again, it is another steamy one up here. I said it, the last couple of days, it has been steamy, but people still enjoying the track, still great racing. If you want to come up, stay hydrated, bring your cooler, fill it with ice and beverages, and grab some sandwiches and go sit at a picnic table. Have a great day up here. But if you have your set number of days for Saratoga set aside and you think, I don't really want to go up on a humid day, you can always go to one of the Capital OTB branches or Easy Bets or, of course, the Clubhouse Racebook down on Central Avenue and take advantage of the AC, the air conditioning this afternoon to watch all the great racing up here at Saratoga on a Friday afternoon. Tomorrow, be back in at 9 a.m. for the Handicappers Report. 10 a.m. Racing Across America. We have already taped an interview with Tyler Gaffleone. He'll be on board Got Stormy tomorrow in the four-star Dave. Still tinkering with some of the scheduling as far as Racing Across America tomorrow, but I know Tyler is in the can already with the tape piece, so you can look forward to that tomorrow, 10 a.m., and much, much more. We'll wrap things up for this Friday edition. I mentioned earlier, I went into the winner's circle for a couple of the stakes last Saturday on the Whitney card. Brad Cox after the Whitney, Joe O'Brien after the win in the Saratoga Derby. Just interesting to hear Brad and his thoughts on Nixco and the performance and what's up next. But Joe O'Brien Fun, a son of Aidan O'Brien, the prominent European trainer. Joe started his career, a brief career as a jockey, pretty good brief, but nice career as a jockey. Now he is also training, and not necessarily his father's level, which is pretty high, but he's doing all right early in the training career, and he came over from Europe with a runner and won the Saratoga Derby on Saturday, so I thought it'd be fun to hear from him as well. Game plan was to run these two interviews, and they're just a few minutes long, but to run these on Sunday, but we had the technical difficulties. So, up next, as I am going to step out, but we will wrap things up. You can watch over the next few minutes. Brad Cox, Joe O'Brien, Winner's Circle, last Saturday, Whitney and Saratoga Derby. We'll see you tomorrow for the Handicapper Support at 9 a.m.
Top of the stretch, Cellist on the inside and Bolshoi Ballet on the outside. Then it is Flashiest. In behind is Dujour. Cadillac looking for a way through. State of Rest is there. And down on the inside is Soldier Rising as the field comes for the eighth pole. Here is State of Rest.
who has rallied for the lead. State of Rest is in front. Soldier Rising moves into second. It will be State of Rest to win it here by a length. State of Rest pulling off the upset in this $1 million Grade 1 Saratoga Derby.
We thought this was a lovely spot. We thought the conditions would suit him well. And obviously we weren't sure how he'd handle this level, or he hadn't got around turns like this before, but he handled it really well.
Were there instructions for Velasquez before the race?
You know, Johnny's an amazing rider and he's very experienced, so I told him to break as good as he could and get him comfortable, and, you know, wherever he was. Johnny, I'm not going to give someone like Johnny too many instructions.
You know, Whitney Day is a very special day here at Saratoga. What does it mean to you? Does it make it even more special to get a win on that day?
It's fantastic to be here. It's the most beautiful track. Fantastic atmosphere. We've been looked after so well by everyone, and it's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Have you been here before?
I was here once before, yeah. I was here a couple of years ago, and I've been here for the sale. So, it's like I say, it's fantastic to have a winner here. It's a dream.
And this is your first winner?
Yeah, it's my first winner here. Okay. Yeah.
What does this horse show you at home that might make you think he could come here, though? Like,
He's always been a good horse. Good form at two and good races. And, he's split up a big run today.
Yeah. What do they need mentally or whatever to handle a trip and everything? A new place and everything's, different.
It is, but you know what? The horses get so looked after so well on the way. It's actually a very easy process, and 99% of the horses take it in their stride.
When did he get here?
At the beginning of the week. So he just trained the last few days. Just kept it on the main track. Mm-hmm. When they get here, we just keep stretch their legs until the race. So I think he trained about 4 days.
Okay. When you said you had been here before, you had started a horse here before.
I think I had one runner in this race a few years ago, and he ran midfield.
You kind of hit it on a moment ago, but give me your impressions of Saratoga. Not just the racetrack, but have you been around town?
Like I say, you know, what I said is it's the most beautiful track. The people are so nice here. We were looked after so well. We're really welcomed. The history that the place has, and it's a real pleasure to be here.
The field is at the 3/16th pole. It is Nick's Go, Silver State at the rail. Maxville looks to split horses. Then the filly Swiss Skydiver. Now an eighth of a mile to the finish. And it is Nick's Go out in the middle of the track and holding on to the lead here. It's Nick's Go with a wire-to-wire victory in the 94th running of the Grade 1 Whitney. Maxfield was second, and Silver State finished third. The mile and a furlong, 1 minute, 47 and 3/5 seconds.
It's in Saratoga, and it can be a demanding surface and a demanding track. But, you know, I thought the race at Prairie Meadows really tuned him up well. He did it well within himself. And, that was really his big work for this race. 5 weeks out, he had three maintenance works, really, at Church or at Ellis. And he came in here a fresh, happy horse, and he performed well.
Were you surprised at the ease he just dusted everybody when they
fell in? Yeah, maybe down the lane at the 16th pole. I didn't really think to, you know, maybe the last little bit, you know, like, oh, wow, he's going to win this thing. And at that point, I was like, wow, what a horse. I mean, what a performance for him to go 46 and change and, you know, really spread out down the backside and get away from him and to almost, you know, really just kick on at the 8th pole and really have to fight off some really, really good challenges. I mean, this is an incredibly deep group of horses. I'm very proud of the effort today.
What did you think when you tried to help?
I thought he's going to have to do some running. With that big a lead up the backside, I could have maybe envisioned him maybe continuing to have that type of lead, maybe holding on down the lane. But he really showed some fight down the lane, and I thought, wow, they're running at him. And he responded well at the 8th pole and kicked on home.
What do you think of Rosario's ride?
Oh, I mean, he fits his horse like a glove. I mean, he just... For whatever reason, Joel's a very good horseman and, you know, gets a lot of run out of a lot of horses. So this is one that he obviously fits extremely well.
The Breeders' Cup, do you have a plan?
Not yet. Yeah, we're going to let the dust settle. He's a very sound horse. He's happy and, you know, very pleased with how he's been training. Obviously, we wouldn't be here if he wasn't. And, you know, we'll come up with a plan somehow. You know, end up at Del Mar, you know, the Dirt Mile or the Classic, you know. I mean, there's a big difference in the purses. Obviously, the Classic will probably be the first choice, but we'll just kind of let the dust settle and see how things go. Something about winning on this circuit that's just, it's amazing. I mean, you know, look around, fans, the way the community community here. The city of Saratoga embraces racing, and the horseman is just humbly. It's an incredibly special place, and I'm very proud to say that we're able to win the Whitney.
You've been watching Racing Across America. Racing Across America has been brought to you by... Racing Across America is brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga, just minutes from the track. The Leah Auto Group, Leah Cars for life. Find them on the web at leahcars.com. The new Capital OTB wagering platform. Bet any place, anytime with the new Capital OTB wagering platform. CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier wagering site in New York State. And the Clubhouse Racebook. Can't make it to the track? Make it to the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.